Hello, I'm John Deakes, and welcome to this, the first Noel Whittaker standalone podcast, a companion to the popular and free newsletter available on Noel's website and also the widely read articles in newspapers around Australia. Now, along with his professorial role at QUT Business School, Noel is a sought-after speaker, the go-to person for investors and business leaders here and around the world, and indeed one of the country's most successful authors, helping people like you and me understand in plain English the complex world of finance. And at a time where he could easily and justifiably be resting on his laurels and improving his golf handicap, Noel is working harder than a lot of people half his age. So before we jump into a review of his latest newsletter, I have to ask, what drives you, Noel Whittaker?
Well, it's a sense of purpose, I think. One of the two major things of being happy when you're older is a social network and a sense of purpose. And I just love what I do.
Well, you do it so well, but really, you know, just think how your golf handicap could be brought down so far.
Well, I'm doing the best there. That's a work in progress, unfortunately. That's a work in progress.
Now, Noel, this is very exciting because we get to articulate your very popular newsletter, which comes up every month on your website, noelwhittaker.com. But I want to ask firstly, because we're recording this just after the US elections have been run and won by Donald Trump, what do you see as the thumbnail sketch impacts of Trump's election?
Well, the first thing, it was an overwhelming result from the average person, and proves the stupidity of celebrity endorsements. The average person couldn't give a toss about celebrity endorsements, and I think that's one of the big issues in this.
What about the financial aspects?
The big trouble there is that neither one, that's Harris or Trump, has addressed the major issue, is America's debt.
Yeah.
It's hit $36 trillion. Next year, the interest alone will be more than the cost of their defense forces.
Wow.
So the military and medical care are their two major issues, as they are in Britain and Russia and Australia, and no one's got a way to fix it. You only fix it by raising taxes or cutting services.
He's not going to raise taxes, I'm sure, but he probably will reduce certain services.
Well, I heard Elon Musk say he was going to sack about a million public servants. That'll be interesting.
Yeah. What effects do you think that could have on Australia? Certainly the Aussie dollar is heading south at this time. Am I correct?
Yes, as we speak. But I mean, all this stuff's volatile. I think in investing, you must think long term.
Yeah.
I mean, the market was up last night. It could be down next week. You must think long-term in this, because the markets will bounce up and down short-term and people will have expectations and worry.
Mm.
But an investor like me, just hang in there, because you know that over a decade, there's normally four bad years and six good years. So you stay in there. You can't second-guess what's going to happen.
But you confident that Donald Trump and his team will be beneficial to Australia's economy? Because let's face it, everyone worries about their own back pocket. Speaking on a national side, Australia's back pocket will be better or worse off with a Trump presidency.
Well, we don't know what he'll do, but it was certainly no trouble when he was there last time.
Right.
So I think what he did last time is a fair indication of this time.
Is our dirt still valuable to the Chinese and others?
Of course it is. Of course it is.
Yeah, that's saved us a few times, hasn't it?
Yes.
Let's get on to some of your latest newsletter, Noel, and I'd like to start with negative gearing. It's back in the spotlight.
Look, it's always in the spotlight. We have a major housing crisis, an affordability crisis, because they keep bringing immigrants in and they need somewhere to live.
Right.
And of course, someone's always after a quick fix, and negative gearing is supposed to be a quick fix. And negative gearing has become borrowing for property, but really, in its proper term, it should be you make an investment and you can deduct the expenses from your tax return. Now, what a lot of people don't know is that most of those deductions are what's called non-cash charges, which is depreciation. So that, okay, I might make a $5,000 loss on the rental property if I had one, but $4,000 could be depreciation charges. So when you sell the property, they're clawed back, because it increases your base cost.
Mm.
Now, I sold a property in July. The purchase price was $220,000, but Smart Noel had the contract apportioned $80,000 fixtures and fittings and $140,000 for the building. When I came to sell it, my base cost was reduced by $80,000, and I had a much bigger tax bill because I'd enjoyed the tax deductions over time.
Right.
But really, look, it doesn't save the economy much money anyway. I mean, let's say a couple of negative year of property, and for the first 5 years they lose $5,000, that might save about $4,000 in tax. After 5 years, it's probably neutral geared, and after another 5 years, it's positively geared. Then when they come to sell it in 30 years' time, they've got a big capital gains tax bill, and they may not qualify for the age pension. So us giving them $5,000 in tax breaks today may save future governments $1 million. And also don't forget that the 30% bracket goes down to $135,000. You only get back your marginal tax rate. So if I lose $10,000, the government gives me $3,000, I still pay $7,000.
Noel, is it harder in 2024/5 being a landlord than it's ever been?
Mate, there's more and more things going on behalf of the tenant. In Queensland, there's no onerous laws like you cannot refuse a reasonable request. That could be fly screens, a pet, a tenant even, you name it.
Yeah.
Also, the government, they haven't increased the thresholds in land tax for 18 years, which means we're still being charged on 18-year-old values because there's a base level and you pay land tax over it. Now, our base level is $450,000. It should be $1 million, but they won't do that. So as the properties go up, the land tax bill gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right.
And with the land tax bill and the interest and the rates and the maintenance, I think most people are saying it's all too hard. Honestly, you're much better in shares anyway. I mean, the great thing about shares is there's no expenses, no costs, there's no land tax, and your income is franked, which means in that under $135,000 bracket, your income is tax-free.
And of course, as you say in November's newsletter, Noel, in a lot of cases, shares outperform residential property.
In my experience, always.
Yeah. I mean, why would you want to own property if you could just sit back and watch your shares, hopefully travel north without all the heartache, as you mentioned?
Yes. And the other thing with that is they're trying to reduce the discount on capital gains tax. Like it's now 50%.
Mm.
Now, if you're going to increase the rate of capital gains tax by reducing the discount, there's got to be a starting date because you can't make it retrospective. So if they said, righto, from 30 June next year, capital gains tax is much heavier, then most people would sell.
Right.
They'd create a hell of a market between now and June 30th, and then nothing would happen. Of course, the more unattractive you make being a landlord, the less properties there'll be. It can't possibly solve the rental crisis. It's not possible.
In retirement, you mentioned in the newsletter that it's shares are a better deal than investing in property. But what if I was purchasing my first property, I've stayed there, it's the starter house, and I want to go to another property, and if you're lucky enough to be able to hang on to that first property and move over to a larger property, would you say it's better to take the windfall from your first property and put the money against the loan, or is it better to hang on to the first property if you possibly can?
Well, if the first property's paid off and you keep it, all your rents are going in tax anyway. And don't forget that first homes, there's not usually a huge leap in value. So instead of owning a depreciating property in which I'm paying a mint in tax on the rents, you could cash it in tax-free and have a bigger deposit on the next family home.
Right.
And then you could borrow against that family home to buy shares. I mean, you could put $100,000 in the share market then.
Right.
Or borrow it against that new home. Absolutely.
And this probably moves on to our next subject in your November newsletter on your website and also printed around the country, as I mentioned, that's housing affordability. It seems that the government are very ambitious as far as trying to build new homes for a lot of people. Lead me through some of those issues.
I was talking to a guy yesterday who's in the property business. They just cannot get staff. One group wanted to come to Queensland and the CFMEU would not let them in.
Wow.
We're controlled by unions up here. Wages are ridiculous. You just cannot afford to do them. So, A, there's not stock available. There's not
Have you been to Victoria?
Is it worse, is it?
Well, we're having a huge inquiry and there's a lot of pushing and shoving down here, I can tell you.
There is no doubt a house is relatively more expensive. I guess the one good thing is that rates won't be dropping soon, but they won't be going up. I think in about 12 months, we might see rates start to drop. We won't see rates dropping soon.
Yeah, the Feds have held it now for, what, three periods, I think, or two?
A fair while, yes. They certainly won't put them up. But the trouble is that the government's got its foot on the accelerator and the Reserve Bank's got its foot on the brake.
Right.
Now, we're 6 months off a federal election. Can you imagine the spending that's going to happen?
Yeah.
They will spend, spend, spend. What governments do now is buy votes to the Queensland. But what's interesting, I think the LNP have got a good scheme that I like. It lets people access their superannuation for a house deposit. So basically, under the LNP scheme, you can borrow from your super fund 40% of the balance with a maximum of $50,000.
Right.
So the average super for a 30-year-old is about 80 grand. So if you're a couple and you both borrowed $32,000 each, you've now got $64,000 to put towards your house deposit, and that could save you $30,000 in mortgage insurance.
Wow.
Then when you sell the property, you repay the loan plus interest at the rate your house appreciated. So when you sell the house in 8 or 9 or 10 years' time, if it's appreciated by 4% in that time you're in it, then you repay that $32,000 each plus 4% out of the house proceeds. I think it's a great scheme.
You mentioned mortgage insurance just then. I think I took mortgage insurance in as much as if I was unwell, then they would continue to pay the mortgage.
No. Mortgage insurance, if you've got less than a fifth deposit, 20% deposit, the mortgage insurance insures the lender if your house is sold at a loss. It's nothing to do with you.
Ah, is it transferable?
Well, this is the whole problem. It's not. So you could own a property in Melbourne with the National Bank.
Yep.
You want to transfer and you've paid mortgage insurance. It could be $30,000 or $40,000 and you might have paid it 2 years ago. You then want to move to the CBA for a lower rate. They're going to charge you a whole new set of mortgage insurance.
And this is, of course, how they make their money. Well, one of the ways.
Well, it means that you can't refinance.
Right.
And I've been pushing the coalition on this and they're listening. One of your main election planks should be make mortgage insurance transferable. It costs nothing. I mean, if you're paying the premium on that property and you change lenders, nothing changes. There's no more risk. In fact, the fact that you're refinancing at a low rate of interest would mean you're even better available to make your mortgage payments. But the trouble with all this is every single thing we do to make home ownership easy increases demand and drives up prices.
Right. So who are the benefactors of that? The builders?
Well, they're doing it tough from what they tell me. They just can't get people. They can't finish jobs.
Yeah, or a lot of the infrastructure that's needed to build, you know, screws and doors and everything else. But you're right.
It's the same in America. It's a worldwide thing. See, what COVID did was change the world.
My son lives around the corner from you in Norman Park, and he's a Sparky. And, mate, he has started with one van and one bloke. He's got about 10 people now. It's going gangbusters. So you're right. They're after tradies, you know. And,
sure.
And as we know, mate, tradies get the ladies.
Well, but notice that the government now wants to give concessions for the hex debts. We don't need more art students. We need more tradies. And this concession for HEX is totally against the working people. They want the tradies' taxes to pay for these people doing a bloody arts degree.
So should we be looking after the TAFE folks more?
Mate, we need tradies to take care of our elders and to build things.
Yeah. Wow. Again, so true. Let's get on to another subject that's in your November newsletter available on your website, and that's the calculators for superannuation. Explain to me the basics of that.
Okay, there's been a lot of media attention, especially in Choice magazine, that the calculators are wrong. Now, you can go to ASIC's Money Smart website, go to all the superannuation funds websites, and enter certain data, and they will tell you whether you can afford to retire.
Right.
The trouble is it depends entirely on the data you enter. Now, how much you need to retire depends a lot on the inflation rate. If inflation's 8%, you'll need twice as much as if it's 4%. So first of all, you need to work how much you think you'll need to retire. Then you need to enter an amount that you think your fund's going to earn. And then you've got to factor in your own contributions, which you can do very, very well on my superannuation contributions calculator on my website. In my book, Retirement Made Simple, it explains it in detail. But the thing about calculators, it's just to help you plan the journey.
Right.
So you're retiring in 30 years. Okay, well, based on what you have today, on those assumptions, if you invest X, you should be okay. But 12 months' time, you redo the calculations.
Keep reassessing.
Well, it's like a plane journey. You keep looking at the dials because things could happen. I mean, you might lose a job, you might get a job. You might get a big increase in pay. You might get sick. Markets might crash. So all the time, I say to everyone, once a year, assess your net worth. That's how much you're worth. Mm. And that lets you know your goals. Now, if you're 50, you want to retire at 65 and you've got a mortgage, okay, what do I need to do to make sure my mortgage is paid off when I retire?
Mm.
And the best thing is to really boost your contribution to superannuation. There's also a neat trick now, once you get to 60, you can start and still work. You can take out a transition to retirement pension and draw 10% of your superannuation balance tax-free and recontribute that as a tax-deductible contribution.
I just did that yesterday, funnily enough.
You're smart. But also, if you're 60 with $500,000 in super, then if you retire now, you'll get $500,000. If you work for 5 more years, you get $800,000. And if you work to 70, you get $1.4 million. The calculators are a great start, but they can't tell you where you'll be in 30 years' time.
The thing that annoys me every time I go to my accountant or my financial people is they refuse to tell me when I'm going to die. Because I want to know, can I spend some more or should I save some more? And here I am, I'm nearly 74 and I feel fantastic like Noel Whittaker. And, you think to yourself, well, you're not going to be careful, but I don't want to leave it all to the kids. As you're right, it really is a juggling act, isn't it?
There's a stack of calculators, which I talk about in my book, to estimate your life expectancy. But things happen.
They do, sir.
Again, they're calculators. They reckon I might get to 94. How do you know?
Yeah, exactly.
How do you know?
Noel, sage advice, and this is probably a good time to say that, ladies and gentlemen, listening to this podcast, this is merely a summary of the latest newsletter that Noel has on his website, and it's also been printed around the country, as mentioned, but I really do recommend you read the fine print and just read the whole story on Noel's website. And you talk about Super Made Simple. I'm holding a copy of that book in my very hand. From the carrot and the stick. Oh, it's even signed by Noel. Oh, it's worth a fortune. And many other. Starting your own self-managed fund would scare the heck out of me. But so many other things, accountant-based pensions. The books are here. I'm also holding a very important book, Wills, Death and Taxes.
It's going like a train too.
And it should too. And you're one of the most successful authors in this country. I loved that little anecdote you put on your website about a young man who came up to you and said about a book that was given to him.
Well, there's so many of those. I would get an email every couple of days. I bought your book, or my parents gave me a book.
Wow.
Yeah. But also the reason we're doing this is I was reading a quote from Steve Jobs, and he was asked, what will be changed in 10 years? He said, I don't care. I want to know what will be the same in 10 years.
Ah, that's
and in 10 years, people will still have a massive need for financial education. But by having a podcast as well as the newsletter, I'm now giving them two ways to experience it. You can listen to it and read it.
Your books, as you say, are very easy to carry around and just read. I like to call them on the toilet books because you can And I mean that with the greatest respect. But if you have somebody, and I'm thinking about coming up to Christmas, etc., a book from, say, 12 years of age to 18, 10 Simple Steps to Financial Freedom, a great book. 18 to 40, Making Money Made Simple.
The famous book, yes.
Yes, the famous book, Aged Over 40, Retirement Made Simple. And other reads, Will's Death Taxes Made Simple, which I mentioned, and also Downsizing Made Simple and Super Made Simple, which is your latest book. And I can't wait to hear when the next one comes out. I'm keeping quite a library here, and they're all signed. As I say, they're going to be worth a fortune one day.
Thanks, Dixie.
That's my investment. So if people want to know how to get the books, to explain what the books are, and it doesn't matter, you know, look, from the age of 12 on, it's never too early to start to think about finances. And as we get older, we can see that. When you're 12, you don't think of it. You might get money, pocket money or whatever, but boy, start, you know, like it is watching the road, how to drive properly, all those sorts of things that we teach our kids. Financial understanding is one of the most important.
Sure. And the basic principles in 10 steps is to spend less than you earn and understand the magic of compound interest.
Yeah,
that's
it in a nutshell. Noel, I do recommend that you go to noelwhitaker.com.au, have a look at the books, have a look at the latest newsletter, tell your friends to listen to this podcast, because I want to be able to speak to Noel every month about what's happening in the financial world. Are you nervous or excited about the future financially, Noel, for the world?
Mate, the world's always got better. You know, I'm always excited. But I think when you get to our age, it's relationships and experiences and your health are your main values.
Dead right. I look forward very much to talking to you again in the future, my friend. Be well, be happy, and good luck with your golf handicap.
Thanks so much, Dixie.